This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Welcome, friend, to our weekly garden party. We hope you brought along your questions, because it's time to dish the dirt. On The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Hey, good morning, Charlie.
And is it going to be a fun show or what?
Oh, my gosh, yeah. Exactly. The sous chef of the garden, Frank Proctor.
Yes,
you're
indeed.
Along with Charlie. And we have a special guest.
Paul Galatly is with us from the Toronto Zoo.
Thank you.
Good morning.
I understand. I didn't realize how big this news was. The springing on us, but pretty big.
Yeah, seriously. In more ways than one.
It is big.
But before we let Paul tell us his big news, might as well get those numbers out. You do your job.
Exactly.
Did you bring the bell?
I thought I had.
No, it's okay.
Oh,
we'll
my God.
Worry about it
okay,
in a break.
Okay, it's that back on my desk. I'll get it in a minute. All righty. But main thing is you got to get through to Charlie to ask her a question or make a comment. Either one.
Or Paul. Paul might have some great answers to questions. He's quite a skilled, talented gardener. Been gardening for many, many, many years.
I have indeed.
And is the curatorial gardener for the Toronto Zoo.
Ooh, we'll explain all that moments from now. Right now, phone numbers are, in Toronto, call 416-360-0740. And then anywhere in the province, toll free, 1-866-740-4740. Keep in mind our little mantra, call early, call often, one question per call. And if you happen to be a first-time caller, please let Ainsley, as our operator today, Ainsley know, and she'll let me know, and I'll bring a little bell in here and ring it just before I get to the air.
And until the bell makes its arrival, we'll just make some noise.
Yeah, that's right.
It's all about the garden wings, right? Don't be a stranger. Don't be afraid to call. We love to hear. We get tips. We get questions. We get calls from all over. You may not realize this, Paul, but this is a huge signal. So people are listening, but then obviously we're broadcast live on the web. So we get calls from all over the place.
That's awesome.
Not to mention emails from all over the place. Just a couple, what I do is a little bit of updates on what's going on in the hort world. And of course, now it's September, the hort societies are back in action. So the Agent Court Garden Club having its WOW annual flower, vegetable and design competition, September the 8th. And of course, that would be today. Open from 2 until 4 o'clock. Open to the public, no cost, Knox United Christian Education Center, 2575 Midland Avenue in Shepherd in Agent Court. It's quite awesome. All the members have brought in, and this is the competitive part of horticulture, which is always the fun part. What people will do for a red ribbon. On September 12th, so later this week, Scarborough Garden and Hort Society is hosting a free general meeting. That's Wednesday evening, 7 p.m., Scarborough Village Recreation Center, 3600 Kingston Road and Markham Road. Our good friend Dugald Cameron is speaking, and his subject is planting your spectacular spring garden now. Again, guests are welcome, refreshments are included, and you just can't go wrong. You'll meet lots of fun people if you want to get out to a hort society.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we've got a lot to talk with Paul about.
Yes,
so
we do.
What do you say we take our first little break here, then come back, we can reintroduce Paul, and boy, he's got some big news, really.
I know. Yeah. And we couldn't do the show without our sponsor, so we need to give them a chance.
Exactement, my darling. All right, away we go. And we'll be back momentarily here as we broadcast live and direct from the Zoomerplex in Liberty Village.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
And Charlie, I did bring the bell.
Excellent. We're in business.
Okay.
All right. So that's our magical bell, which first-time callers get only when they call the first time. So listen, I can't keep everybody just waiting in anticipation. So, Paul, please, curatorial gardener from the Metro Zoo, Paul Galatly, here, special guest, share with us your special announcement.
So we've got a big announcement.
Yes,
really big. The Toronto Zoo is looking for one of the largest, actually. The Toronto Zoo is looking forward this week to the corpse flower, Amorphophallus titanum, opening up for the first time in the GTA.
So let's go back. Corpse flower. That's the common name.
Yep.
Amorphophallus titanum being the proper name.
That is the proper Latin name.
Okay, so I teach horticulture at Durham College, and I'm going to be using this as a good example for my students this week of nomenclature.
Absolutely.
And how naming works. So most Latin names are very descriptive of the plant.
Absolutely.
So amorpho meaning...
Yep, misshapen.
Misshapen or not regular. Phallus meaning penis.
Penis, yep.
So we've got misshapen penis. Titanum, meaning...
It's giant.
Big. Giant.
The Titanic was named the Titanic for a reason. It was big.
Right.
So we've got a really big, twisted penis ready to flower,
for the first
time.
At the zoo.
And your the olfactory value
well,
here.
That's it. Where does the corpse flower come in?
Yeah, the corpse flower comes in with the smell.
Yeah.
It is one of the strongest smelling plants in the world. It only flowers every, 10 to 20 years. So it's got to stink really bad when it first opens up to attract the pollinators.
And it only flowers for like 24 to 36 hours.
That's
correct. Really?
Yeah, it only flowers for a day or two.
Wow.
And then it's done.
Speaking of, there it is. Our lights just went on and off as part of a goodbye flower. But you're expecting it to be in full olfactory
full flower this
disgustingness
week.
This week.
Yes, absolutely. It'll be this week. It is still growing a little bit, and it'll slow right down before it starts to flower. So we've got a 2-day warning. Mm-hmm. So as soon as we get that stopping of the growth, we'll be letting everybody know on the Toronto Zoo website.
So how often are you measuring this flower?
We are measuring it every day, twice a day in some cases.
A couple times a day.
I'm a little anxious about it, so we're definitely taking
care. It's about 3 feet tall now, as I understand.
It's about 3
right?
feet tall now, yeah.
And did you visit it this morning before you came in?
I did not, but I did get some photos, and I did get an update before I came in.
Okay, good, from other people who are there.
From other people that are there, yes.
So you found that it was about 3 feet, it's grown not the full 2 inches you've been seeing the last few days.
It hasn't. Leading right up until yesterday, it was doing 2 to 3 inches a day. Last night it was down to only about 3/4 of an inch.
Okay.
So it's definitely slowing down, and the spadix is starting to color up. So those are all good signs that we're getting close.
So it's really worth Googling. Anybody who doesn't know what this plant looks like and has access to a computer, just the simple word corpse flower will give you an idea of what a crazy looking plant this is.
Absolutely.
Okay, so this is a little on the sort of nerdy horticultural side. It's understood that this is an insect or probably beetle pollinated plant.
That is correct. Yep.
And it's nocturnal beetles because the smelliest is at night.
That's correct.
Yeah, and it's again short term. So do you bring in pollinators for something like that? Do you try and get seeds?
We actually have pollen available to us from another one that flowered in Edmonton. But we've decided we're not going to pollinate ours. This one is really small.
Right.
It's about 4 to 5 years ahead of schedule.
Right.
So the bulb was only 24 pounds when it started. So with the giant flower, 3.5-foot flower that grew out of it, there's not a lot of energy left in that corm.
Right.
So if we did pollinate it, we would probably end up killing the flower. We would get a couple of seeds, but it wouldn't end up moving forward, and we want to see it grow bigger and get to be a 5-foot flower next time.
The corm.
Yeah.
And the other thing is maybe those seeds are not, it's maybe not genetics you necessarily want to keep. I guess you don't really know. But
a lot of them are actually connected genetically because they all came from the same couple of seeds from Kew, in the early 1900s, and they've sort of dispersed around the world.
And, of course, this plant is native to one very small part of the world.
Very small part of the world. It's from Sumatra in Indonesia.
Right. And
it's indigenous only to that area.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And what it is, it's an understory, like in the forest plant. Mm-hmm. And because it's got this very short flowering opportunity, which is obviously we flower to produce seeds and we produce seeds to maintain our genetics, right?
Yeah.
That's our thinking about, being,
absolutely,
anthropomorphic when it comes to plants. So that's the theory on why it is, number one, so big, but so stinky, is it's got such a short opportunity for the pollination to occur. So that's the, sort of the historians and the...
Yeah, absolutely. And the flower actually heats up. So the flower actually heats up to human body temperature.
Really? It really does. The chemistry in the flower.
Yeah, it actually uses carbohydrates in the flower and heats up.
So it gets a little furnace going.
And then it sends out waves
Oh, wow.
of the smell.
and it smells like a rotting mammal, basically.
Yeah, it's rotting flesh.
Yeah.
Oy.
Ooh,
yeah,
I'm going to go.
I'm looking forward to it.
I'm going to go. Like, we figure Tuesday night.
Well, this is so rare.
We're not 100% sure, so we don't want to say Tuesday night yet. Just check the Toronto website, but we're gonna let everybody know within that two-day period.
And you
it
will
should be this week.
Have some extended hours.
Absolutely.
So what are your normal hours at the zoo?
I believe we're open at this time until 6 or 7.
So 9 in the morning kind of thing.
Yeah, from 9. So we're going to actually stay open later. We're going to open until 11 p.m. Mm. Last admission will be at 8:30.
Wow.
We're setting up for lines, so come prepared.
You look at some of the YouTube videos. There's like 25,000 people swung through the last one.
I mean, and it's only a day or so, so you got to get people through pretty quickly.
It's a big deal.
That's amazing.
It is a huge horticultural marvel, that's for sure.
It's very unusual. Like Paul said, it's every 10 years max that these things flower.
And that's not reliably.
No.
Some will take 20 years, some will take 30 years before they come back. There's really we don't know a lot about them. There aren't that many of them out there.
That's
so.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. We have to take a little bit of a break here.
And then maybe we should go to a caller.
And then we'll go to a caller.
Because probably Siva's getting tired of waiting for
us. Well, maybe take Siva's call right now. How about that?
Yeah, let's.
And then we'll take a little bit of a break.
Okay.
Will get us kind of back on track. Okay. Hey, Siva, welcome to the show. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks, Frank, for my song. It was lovely.
Oh, you got it last Monday.
Great. Good. Yes.
Song requests
Downtown
on
train.
The garden show.
Okay. One quick question on raspberry canes.
Mm-hmm.
I had some that didn't bear fruit, but they're very tall. Should I cut them down now for next year, or should I leave them?
Are they ever bearing raspberries, or are they this just first time spring blooming bearing? Do you know?
Well, normally they do bear, but these canes that are tall haven't borne any fruit. So
yeah, normally the ones we cut down are the ones that have borne.
Yeah.
Right? But if it hasn't borne, but if they're really tall, how tall? Like, because they're going to go down, flip.
It looks like nearly 5 feet, the ones that are up. You know?
Yeah. If you can leave them, leave them. But if they're going to impact causing your raspberry bush to get too big, then you may have to cut them back. But obviously, they will bear next year. That's the theory on the fresh canes.
Okay.
Right?
Thank you. I just want to make a quick comment about that flower. It's so beautiful. But you know, if it wasn't stinky, everybody would be picking the poor guy, so he wouldn't be able to produce seeds.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Okay.
But
keep in mind, picking it is hard because this is a massive plant. When it's at its full, you know, glory.
Yeah.
What,
six, seven, 8 feet tall.
Tall and wide.
And wide.
I've seen pictures of it, and I always wish I had one. Okay.
Thank you,
Siva. Alrighty. To be your assistant, I think.
We're going to be back with our special guest, Paul Galatly, and as you fire the questions at, Charlie, and of course, Paul's always welcome to chime right in. Back with more callers in just moments here on The Garden Show.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin.
All righty.
Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Exactly. Sorry, I stepped right in his throat.
Yeah.
From the Toronto Zoo, Paul Galatly, and from our own AM740 files of wonderfulness. Yes, it's Charlie Dobbin.
Thank you, Rosa Franklin.
Is on the line, Charlie, from Milton. Hi, Rosa.
Hi, Rosa.
good morning.
Good
love your name.
To all three of you. Okay.
What's
now,
going?
Shall I get down to the brass tacks?
Yes, please.
Yes.
Okay, then. This is pertaining to rhubarb. Now, a friend of mine, this is the first time I've had it, right? So then the stalks are long, very long, and very, very big leaves, right?
Mm-hmm.
So she said she would like one. So do I say that one rhubarb is one stalk, and then I take a shovel and then I dig under and then break it, or what? I have no idea.
All right, so did you plant this recently, it sounds like?
My friend gave it to me back there in about May when the ground started
this
to
year.
Be not frozen.
All right, so here's the deal. No, don't be sharing that with anybody just yet. Let that plant get bigger and juicier and fatter. And what you're looking at right now, one stalk with a leaf attached to it is just that, a leaf. In order to share...
No, there's many stalks. There's about five of them.
I understand.
Five or six.
Each of those stalks are merely a stalk. None of them are plants.
Oh.
The stalks are growing from the crown of the plant, which is the center from where they're growing from. at some point, you'll have more crowns. You will see in the spring, and it'll take, give it, it's going to be another 2 or 3 years. If your friend really wants rhubarb, tell her to head off to her local garden center, not expensive to purchase in the spring, so next spring, or wait. Just to just give her a leaf, it will not grow. It, you can eat that stalk, compost the leaf, and don't try and grow from it. It will not grow.
Okay.
All right.
I already cut it one time, but then the stalks came more again. So
yes, well, that's good.
Are those to be, is that what it does?
Yeah. Most people grow rhubarb and harvest it in the mid to late spring for the stalks, for baking, for making yummy rhubarb.
Rhubarb pie.
Pies
rhubarb
and crisps and whatever yummy sauces and things you can come up with. And then we leave them alone for the summer, allowing them to fatten up and, you know, just become a bigger, heartier, healthier plant. So you'll have more stalks next spring.
Okay, Rosa.
Okay.
Thank you very much, my love. They're not super edible at this time. You're welcome
very much.
Thanks for joining us on this Saturday. As Rosa leaves the line, that leaves actually a couple of lines open. In Toronto, 416-360-0740. And then anywhere in the province, toll-free, 1-866-740-4740. And out to Vaughan we go. There's Donata. Good morning, Donata. Hello, Donata.
Good morning, Frank. Good morning, Charlie.
Good morning.
How are you?
Excellent.
Good.
Nice, fresh morning.
Yeah, nice, perfect day to get in the garden.
I had to wear a jacket into work. It was so darn cold.
I'm calling because I have a really big tree of magnolia, and I need to trim. It's 30 years old.
And probably
and
never
I'm
been trimmed.
I'm wondering when it's the best time to do it.
Okay, so first of all, you're going to get yourself a certified arborist to do the trimming, not Joe with the chainsaw. You will be much happier, and so will the magnolia, if it's pruned properly. Actually, one of the best times to prune magnolias is about a month from now. Not now, because it's a little too warm.
After the leaves out?
Yeah, in October you can prune, or next spring. Most people would prune after the flowers. That's because you want to maximize and enjoy the flowers. But if it's been 30 years, I would get it trimmed whenever you can get a skilled person to do it for you based on their schedule.
Yeah, because if it's rain, the rain won't go on the grass. It doesn't look right.
Yeah, it's probably just so many leaves. And a magnolia is a beautiful tree, right?
Absolutely.
Paul's
one
nodding.
One of my favorites.
Yeah, but it's all about the sculpture of the plant.
How much I have to trim off?
Well, it's hard to say, but we never usually remove more than 30% of a plant at any one time. And if it's been 30 years, it's going to be a multi-process to get that plant to the proper shape. So you might have to spend a little bit of money more than once just to get it to looking good and being healthy and happy. And then every 5 years, bring back the arborist to touch it all up. And magnolia can last for 100 years if it's looked after properly.
Okay, thank you very, very much. And I love your show. I'm learning a lot every weekend.
Excellent.
Thank you, Donata.
Thank you.
Okay. We should get that on tape.
For now, start soon anyway.
Yeah.
Okay, bye.
All right, bye-bye. Bye-bye. Thanks for calling.
Bye-bye.
I wonder if Donata was a first-time caller.
Gee,
I should have asked her. I didn't recognize her voice. We've been doing the show for more than 10 years. Did you know that?
That's amazing.
I know.
That's awesome.
I think I recognize everybody's voice now.
Now, let's see. Has Teresa been on the show before?
I think so. You'll have to ask
her. We'll find out. Hey, Teresa and Mrs. Saga, good morning. Welcome to the Garden Show.
Hi, good morning, Charlie. Good morning, Fran.
Good morning.
I have an elderberry lemon lace bush.
Uh-huh.
I've had it for about 3 years. And for the past month, all of a sudden, a whole branch is wilted. It's turning brown, and I'm losing the leaves.
I knew you were going to say that. I got an email on this exact same subject.
Oh.
So I'm going to look at Paul. Do you know what's going on with that, Paul?
I don't. I've had a few of that happen around my garden as well, not just with elderberries, with other. I've had Japanese maples lose entire limbs.
Okay, so this goes back to what we were talking about last week, though, talking about how climate affects woody plants.
Uh-huh.
And recognizing what a tough year last year was. It rained and it rained and it rained. Lots of water in all our trees and shrubs.
Mm-hmm.
Then we had a very prolonged fall. We had tropical conditions in October.
Yes, we did.
And the plants went dormant because the days got short enough, but there had been no proper frost. The liquids had not left the building. They had not left to go down to the ground. Leaves hung on. Serious cold came in January, and lots of cracking of bark. So that cracking of bark, of course, opens the plants up for insects to enter and enjoy all the juices and bring diseases with them. So there's been a lot of dieback, a lot of woody plant dieback. And it's this was, I bet you it's another one of those. Mind you, elders are very tasty, so it is possible. I'll check this for you, Teresa, but I think it could be a borer that has decided to take advantage of the sweetness of your plant.
Now, we went to the Sheridan, and they suggested that we spray it with garden fungicide, which we did actually last night.
Okay.
Would that help any?
A garden fungicide will control a fungus.
He thought it was a fungus of some sort.
Okay, and did you take some pieces of the plant with you?
Yes, we did, yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. We lost already... 3 weeks ago, we cut a long, long branch with, and now another branch is going, and we cut that off just so it doesn't spread to the other branches.
Okay. Well, you know what? Leave this with me. I'll try to get back to you today, and if not, I'll get back first thing next week.
Okay.
Just to give you, it could be a wilt disease, which is typically bacterial, not fungal, so a fungicide is just a waste, or it could be a borer that's boring and causing a branch to die, or it could be totally environmental.
Yeah.
So fungus would be sort of fourth on my list of what it might be, but let me do the research and give you
I hope
definitive.
The whole bush. It's about 3 years old.
You're unlikely to. They're very, very, very vigorous plants. So I know. I just about chainsaw mine to the ground every spring, and they come back in full glory. So they're very hard to kill, actually. But so don't worry. It's probably fine. But do remove anything dead.
Yes.
Clean pruners. Wash your pruners with alcohol, rubbing alcohol, in between cuts, and don't keep any material you cut on the property, including the leaves if they drop.
Yeah, we do rake it up right away.
Good, good.
Okay.
So good garden hygiene is one of the best ways to prevent this spreading.
Absolutely.
Okay, very good.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Report back.
I'm sorry?
I will report back.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thanks, Teresa.
And thank you. I love your show.
Thank you.
We listen to it every Saturday.
Oh, that's
you.
Great.
Take care.
As does a very good friend of mine, Marlene Oliver, very famous radio name and voice.
Yes.
And I talked to her yesterday.
She's a fan, isn't she?
I said, well, call in.
Yeah.
No, you'd laugh at me. I said, no.
We laugh at everybody.
Exactly.
You're not special, Marlene.
It's
always good fun.
All right. Now, I'm anxious to ring my bell here, for the first-time callers, and I don't know whether Dieter in Honey Harbor is a first-time caller or not, but let me check. Hey, Dieter, good morning.
Good morning, guys. How is it going down there in the metropolitan of Toronto?
In the far south.
Now, are you a first-time caller, Dieter?
First-time caller.
Oh!
Ding dong.
Woo! Ding dong.
You've got
your wings.
Okay, great. I have a question about a little bit advanced. It's a poinsettia. When we came back from our winter holidays, we gave the poinsettia before we left to our friend.
Mm-hmm.
And they returned it with about 3 leaves on it.
Mm-hmm.
So I put it in the garden and watered it and fertilized it, and it is a beautiful plant now.
Nice.
How do I go about to get it blooming?
Did you put it in the ground, or is it still in a pot?
In the pot.
So you just buried the pot?
No, I left the pot outside and put a plate under it so it had continuous water.
Good stuff. So you want to make that poinsettia turn red, do you?
That's right.
All right, we got to count our weeks. So the way it works is poinsettias need 12 hours of dark and 12 hours of light for a period of 14 weeks before you're going to start to see some good coloration, so whether it be the red or the pink that plant is going to become.
Okay.
So your challenge is to figure out how to provide 12 hours of dark and 12 hours of light.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes people will put the poinsettia in an unused bedroom in the house, making
sure.
Yeah,
we got a basement, like it's handy, close to the garden. I can put it out in the garden in the morning, okay. And I take it into the basement.
And you set your alarm. It's like 8 a.m., 8 p.m., or you know something like 7 a.m., 7 p.m. It's right to the minute. And okay. If you're taking it to the basement, make sure nobody goes down to the basement during the dark period. Because even one sliver of light, and you have to start the whole process over again.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, one little tiny nanometer of brightness, and you just blew it, and you start back at 14 weeks. But it works. It really works. Just remember, light, full light, continue to water as you have been, fertilize as you have been, take care of the plant. Just the dark light will make the difference.
What about temperatures?
Well, once we get anywhere below 10 degrees Celsius, then don't be taking it outside anymore. Make sure you keep it inside. It'll be in the brightness of your living room or sunroom down to the basement.
Okay.
Okay, great.
And I want a report back.
Yeah.
You call me
what about if I
in
don't
December.
Take this daylight and darkness, and if, can I keep it as a plant?
Sure.
Beautiful flowers. The leaves are on right now. They're just beautiful.
Well, and the trick is they will stay mostly green or all green. You might get a little bit of tinges of color without the special treatment. It's a perfectly nice plant. Nothing wrong with it. It'll just get bigger and bigger. And, you know, don't forget to pinch the tips to make it bushy, which I think you probably have done.
It's so bushy right now, like it's overwhelming. Like I never thought seen a poinsettia like this.
Wow.
Oh, that's great.
It's just beautiful. Fertilizing?
Yep. Fertilize every couple of weeks. Keep it happy. Keep it healthy. It's coming into its prime. And if you can give it the light treatment, it'll look amazing.
That is great.
You got my work cut out for me.
You do. Set your alarm, like I said.
Thanks, Dieter.
I appreciate your help.
Thanks, Dieter.
Thanks for joining us from Honey Harbor. That sounds like a perfect spot to be.
Bye-bye.
Take care,
beautiful.
My friend. Now, as we wave bye-bye to Dieter, I'm looking at our monitor here. I can't believe it. Very, very seldom does this ever happen. We have blank lines.
Well, because everybody wants to hear from Paul.
Well, that's probably it.
So you can give the phone number.
Yes, I'll do that. 416-360-0740. In Toronto. Anywhere else in the province, it is toll free 1-866-740-4740.
I just want to tell you a quick story about poinsettias.
Yeah.
The first time, I mean, obviously, we know our little pots that we have here in, you know, southern Ontario. First time I was in Mexico, a long time ago, I was in a small village in Mexico, and it was right around Christmas. And guess what was in absolutely full bloom was a poinsettia tree. Now, this poinsettia tree was about 30 feet tall and 30 feet wide in full red glory. Mm. And that's where they're native to, right? Mm-hmm. They're from Mexico originally. And the reason why they didn't have to put an umbrella over it to block the light is because in the area in Mexico, close to the equator, they're getting their 12 hours of light and dark naturally. And it's a small village. There is no electricity. There is, the sun comes up, we get to work, sun goes down, we go to bed. So the poinsettia very naturally blooms beautifully with no interference from anybody in those situations. Now, of course, I haven't been back to Mexico in many years, but I'm sure those trees are not blooming because of all the artificial light that's hitting them in the winter.
Yeah.
So they're mostly green.
That's right.
But have you ever seen that, Paul?
I have. I've actually seen hedges of them in Mexico where the entire hedge was lit up. With just bright bracts of color. It's
just
amazing.
All beautiful, bright and red all by itself. Yeah. Nobody putting it in the basement.
That's
our challenge. We have so much electric light. When the sun goes down, we stop that coloration.
For those who are watching live, because we are on camera here, and every time the microphone opens, that means you can see us behind the microphones. You'll note that Paul Galatly's a beautiful outfit there from the Metro Zoo. He's wearing
name tag and all.
Yes.
Name tag and all.
And I asked him before the show, do all the animals out there sort of recognize you as you're going around? And Paul?
Yeah, absolutely. We all wear the same uniform, so the keepers wear this uniform as well. So when the animals see me, they think I'm a keeper.
Really?
Which is wonderful, because I am a keeper, in all honesty.
You are.
it's wonderful. I mean, the connection that we build with these animals and the zoo, the top priority is the care for these animals. Yeah. And they know it, and we know it, and it just works out really well.
So how do you know they recognize you?
They act a little differently. They'll come to the front of the enclosure. enclosure, all thinking right. they may get a treat or food. Something like that, or food. They're very food,
little pet.
Food motivated, and we do a lot of enrichment with them as well. So we'll add, you know, cardboard boxes into play with, and we hide treats through their things. So they know that we sort of bring fun to them. Yeah. So they tend
that's
to like.
That's good too.
Isn't that great?
So how do you look after plants that are in the enclosures?
There's a lot of processes. Yeah. We work very closely with the keepers, and a lot of the times we'll take the animals off exhibit,
right.
And then we'll go in and
do a couple hours maintenance
and trim the plants and things like that. And then when we're done, we lock it all up and the animals come back out.
So they swoosh them into.
They swoosh them in. And a lot of times they'll go off exhibit every night. They'll go into different pens and then.
Because they sleep somewhere else. Yeah.
So sometimes, you know, we're there first thing in the morning, 6 a.m. So we go out.
You can sneak in there and they're still sleeping.
Before they even know that we've been there.
Yeah, they don't smell your coffee and wake up.
No, absolutely.
And it must be, and sterility must be a big deal too.
It really is.
You have to be really careful with hygiene. Partially because of the plants, partially because of the animals.
Absolutely, for both.
Yeah, so are you ever wearing like hazmat suits?
We have hazmat suits for different things. And,
as you change exhibit?
And different boots, different outfits, and absolutely.
Bacteria baths.
And step on different mats and stuff as we go into different areas.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah, it's really important because you would not, like, you could lose a lot of collection.
Absolutely.
But, yeah, any living,
cases,
yeah.
Animals and
if you
bringing something untoward into that area.
Something that you brought in when you came in the morning when you sneezed, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, oh,
right?
My God.
You got to be really careful.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Huh.
Well, nothing to sneeze about here. We've got the lines all jammed,
again.
As a matter of fact. Yes. And Al in Unionville. Good morning, Al. How are you?
We should take a break.
Oh.
Look at your time, baby.
Oh, my gosh.
Sorry, Al.
Yeah. No, that's right. Al, hang tight.
Yep.
In Unionville, there will be with you momentarily.
We're all producers here, just in case you're wondering.
Right.
Oh, I don't know the answer. Oh. Frank, do you know the answer?
Back in a moment on The Garden Show.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stocks, phlox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
And Paul Gladly from the
He's good.
Metro
He's
Zoomer.
Dancing along to my music. I like it.
All right. Now, Al has been very patient out there in Unionville. Let's get him on the air. Good morning, Al.
Good morning.
Good morning.
A little bit shocking to wake up and see the temperature drop so much, but probably better for us to work outside.
I was going to say, it's great
Perfect
working weather.
Yeah. My question has to do with a variegated maple. I have a fairly large one now. It may be 10 inches in diameter, maybe more at the trunk. But every year that we've had it, in around August, the leaves start to turn brown around the edges and then start dropping. And this year particularly, they are dropping. It's almost totally bare at this point, and we're curious... Why is that?
Why is that? Well, the white part, so these variegated means green and white leaves on this maple. It is a Norway maple called a harlequin maple. The sun, it's scorch. The leaves end up scorching from the hot sun and the hot temperatures. So the white part is the first part to get scorched. The green can handle the sun beating down and it's busy with all the photosynthesis that it's doing. The white part, on the other hand, is very vulnerable to heat and bright light. So this year, it's probably more heat than anything this year.
So that's my guess, too.
That it's so defoliated. But don't worry, it's September. It's going to defoliate, if not this week, then next week anyway, or a week after. It's the time of year when the leaves are going to drop. So you've had a full season of full photosynthesis, so don't worry. If it was doing this in July, I'd be more concerned than I am when it happens in September.
Okay. So, and no extra amount of watering is going to change that. It's a scorching situation.
Yeah, no, that's just the reality of that specific plant. The one thing I would say, though, is keep a close eye that you don't see limbs that are growing green leaves.
We have a few,
Those need to be removed sooner than later, because, and not just the leaf, but the branch that those leaves are growing on, right back to where that branch starts.
Okay.
Because there is a tendency for the plant to revert back to its original greenness, and if that happens, you will no longer have the variegation at all.
Yeah, it's a beautiful tree, and we really enjoy it.
Yeah, so if you want to maintain that variegation, you've got to physically go in there and remove anything that's not variegated.
Okay, I'll tell my wife that's her job.
I was going to say, that sounds like a good job for the to-do list.
Yeah. She's got the garden sign. It's my garden, so I'll have that job.
There you
on.
Go. You just throw that right back at her. I'm sure she'll be sending me an email real soon.
A little family domestic coming up there.
It's all my fault.
Okay.
Thanks, Al.
Right. Yeah, take care, and thank you for joining us here on The Garden Show. I'm just having a little trouble figuring out who we're heading to here.
I think it's Lewis is next.
Okay.
Wait, I'm just line three. Lewis, right. Toronto, about herbs.
We'll find out very shortly. Ainsley?
I think we just go straight to Lewis. Yep.
Okay, Lewis, hopefully on the line there.
Yes,
good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Excellent.
Good.
You?
Where are you calling from, by the way, Lewis?
Toronto.
Okay.
It's up at the top there, herbs.
I want to talk about bringing herbs inside.
Mm-hmm.
How can I bring, like the wife has a whole bunch of herbs in the ground,
mm-hmm.
and we'd like to try and keep them for the winter. How can I do it?
It's a wonderful idea. It's often hard to actually pull it off. The plants that are outside, particularly if you try and digging them up, though, I mean, there's sort of two schools of thought. If you really want to cover yourself, you do two things. One is you both dig up plants, clean, trim roots, trim tops, just to make them fit into some nice pots with potting soil around the roots. But what you've trimmed off the top, some of those little bits of tips that you prune, you will try and root those so that you'll try and start some new little plants from the cuttings.
Okay.
One way or the other, one of them is likely to survive, but you need to give them the conditions that they're going to be happy in. So lots of light, maybe some supplemental lighting, grow light kind of situation.
Yeah.
And watering, temperature, humidity, all those kinds of conditions that it's been getting for the summer. Plants have been happy. You have to try and continue that through the winter inside our what become very hot, dry homes.
So there is a possibility of bringing them inside.
There is. It's worth a try. It's just sometimes it can be a little frustrating because everything starts really well, but then within a month or so, the plants have kind of petered out. But meanwhile, you've had them indoors, and you can certainly chow down on whatever you've brought in. I notice quite a lot of the grocery stores nowadays are bringing in little pots of just young seedling. You know, it could be basil, it could be parsley, and they're bringing those in to you ready to put on your window ledge inside. And
the plants don't normally, like you said, you can't normally keep them because, for example, I have some mint, which it was from the same pot. I put it in the pot outside, and I brought some inside in a pot.
Yeah.
It didn't get in direct sunlight, so they're very thin stems.
Mm-hmm.
And very, very small leaves,
right.
The one inside. The one outside, ooh.
Yeah, lovely.
The thing is going like gangbusters.
Right. So that goes back to that grow light I was talking about. You need to ensure that big, high light intensity that the plants thrive under outside. You need to give them that inside. And our homes now, we've got all these fancy windows with reflect all the light back out. So, you really have to recognize that the light
is important.
All these
energy-efficient bulbs and stuff, I guess. Those don't really help.
No, there's some great LEDs. There's wonderful grow lights, and I'm seeing some really nice little kits in some of the garden centers.
Absolutely.
Have you seen some of those?
For sure. I've got a couple.
Do you?
Yeah.
And how?
I've seen that Costco. I think it was
that's
last
right.
year they had like a fluorescent grow light.
Yep.
Exactly. And they might even still, they probably still have that on their website. You could probably buy that on the web because you're right. It's kind of a spring product in the store, but that totally worth it. So what is it? 30, 40 bucks?
Well,
it's
that,
worth
I was around
it.
There, yeah. For the price that the grocery stores do it, try it out. If it doesn't work, go buy a new one.
Yeah,
there
yeah, true. But still recognize you need the light.
100%.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Good luck with that, Lewis.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you for joining us here on a Saturday morning, The Garden Show. We're going to continue in just a couple of moments. Go back to, Wasaga Beach, as a matter of fact. Lorna is waiting on the line to have a word with Charlie and, of course, Paul. And we'll be back in just a moment.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
We've got a very lively show today, let me tell you.
<We do. laughs>
From Wasaga Beach, let's welcome Lorna into the show. Good morning, Lorna.
Morning.
Morning.
I'm calling about the Japanese beetles, and I'd like to understand a little bit about their life.
Mm-hmm.
So if they eat the roots of turf grass?
Yes. The baby beetle.
The
before it's a beetle, it's a larva, and commonly we call that what, Frank?
Oh, A grub.
Yay! A grub. You got it.
Because Frank wasn't paying attention, sorry. Well, he's our grub guy. He's our nematode guy.
So, exactly,
so,
yes.
Okay, so what's going on, Lorna? Have you seen some damage in your garden?
Yeah, there is, and I was wondering what you can do for it.
Your timing is perfect.
It is perfect.
Because the beetles that you saw chewing away on the leaves of some of your favorite plants or flowers of your roses...
Yes.
Have pupated, and then so they've gone from being that beetle. Sorry, my mistake. Beetles eat, lay eggs. Eggs hatch, and what comes out of those eggs are little tiny, tiny grubs, which get very fat very quickly underground, chewing the roots of anything. Yeah. Turf is a big one, but obviously they'll chew garden plants as well. So, what do we do, Frank, when we have grubs in the ground?
Oh, you get yourself to a garden center and buy some nematodes. Follow the directions. And spray those little devils. They're microscopic little worms that actually eat those grubs.
The nematodes.
The grubs are to eat the eggs.
Yeah.
Well, they'll eat the grubs, actually.
They'll eat the grubs. The eggs are not still around, probably.
Yeah. But your timing is good. So it's all very, very important that moisture levels be high in the ground that you're going to apply the nematodes to. Big rain coming tomorrow. We've got... You know, Hurricane Gordon aftermath coming through all of southern Ontario. Going to be lots of rain. Perfect conditions the following days. So Monday, Tuesday, get those nematodes. Follow the instructions, as Frank said, and apply them to where you see damage occurring in your garden.
Okay, and do you do anything in the spring?
You shouldn't have to, hopefully. I mean, would you spray nematodes?
I do mine twice a year.
I do mine
in the fall, and then I do them again in the spring, and it just catches the ones that you didn't catch the first time, or if there's still a few beetles around that will get some eggs in after you're done. I just do it to be safe. It's not that expensive, and it's very easy to apply.
But make sure your soil, if you're doing it in the spring,
absolutely.
You've got the soil temperature has to be warm enough that the grubs have come up, and their moisture levels.
June?
I mean, Wasaga Beach, it might be
June, actually, yeah.
Yeah. Depending on what kind of spring we have.
Yeah.
It could be May. Here in Toronto, it probably is
May,
not before that, that the soil's warm enough for the grubs to come up.
Right.
Because they go down for the winter.
Okay.
All right. There we go.
Okay, thank you.
There you go.
Right.
That's
thanks
the
for joining us.
Three-part harmony on how to control Japanese beetle grubs.
And from the shores of beautiful Kempenfelt Bay, there's Kim up in Orillia. Good morning, Kim.
Lake Kuchiching, Frank.
Oh, Lake Kuchiching.
Oh, wait, good point. Really,
yeah.
It's Kuchiching.
Yeah.
Windy Lake.
I'm saying the wrong way. I went the wrong way.
It's the windy lake.
So, anyway, I just want to know, when can I start fertilizing my indoor plants?
You should be stopping fertilizing your indoor plants as the days get shorter and shorter. We don't fertilize.
Okay.
Again.
So they go dormant.
Yeah, well, semi-dormant. I'll usually fertilize right up till September and then no fertilizer till start again in March.
Right.
The exception, of course, is there
because
are...
one plant. I got a philodendron that's the same age as me.
Nice, but don't fertilize it in the winter.
Yeah.
But you might
just leave it now because it's kind of looks droopy, but I've been watering it.
Well, don't keep...
And I thought, I don't want to lose it.
No, but be careful. You could overwater. Remember, days are getting shorter. Plants
That's
are
right.
using less water. So
right.
less water is required. But
That's
I was just
good.
Just going to say that if you have something that is actively blooming, like an orchid, for example, or an African violet, or...
Yeah, my African violet looks good.
Oh, what?
Desert rose.
Desert violet.
Flowering now.
Yep. So if you've got something that's flowering inside your home, another good one would be the Christmas cactus, which are preparing to flower.
Those
will be fertilized because they're flowering, actively growing. Mm. Okay.
Yeah, okay. So I'll fertilize the violet, but not the others.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Not till the spring.
All right.
Thank you very much for calling.
Frank,
thank you.
I'll wrap out next time.
All right. I better get that globe working.
I'm going to take him sailing. We're going to come up to Kuchiching, and he won't forget the name.
That's for sure.
It's lovely.
Now, we're kind of sparse on time, and I think folks who haven't, who weren't tuned in right off the top of the show, maybe we can have Paul Galadley, who is with the Metro Zoo, tell folks again why you're here and what big announcement you've got for us.
Absolutely. The Toronto Zoo purchased was donated 6 corpse flowers in 2013, and about 4 years ahead of schedule, we have one setting up to bloom. So it's starting to slow down its growth, and if you watch the Toronto Zoo website, our social media, you'll be able to find out the updates. We will be putting up the hours. We will have extended hours when it does bloom. It's
and
a pretty big horticultural event.
The next few days.
It'll be in the next few days.
When they say this thing stinks, they mean it. You've even got clothespins.
We've got clothespins coming, just in case. Just in case.
For staff and visitors.
For staff and visitors.
What about the animals?
I'm going to stand beside it for hours. So,
oh, my goodness.
It's in our greenhouses, so it's not an area that's generally on display for the public. So we're actually letting the public into our greenhouse.
And there's
one of the first times.
Rhinoceros-sized clothespins required?
No. You should be okay.
They're not, like, close?
They're not close.
Okay. Wow, that's pretty exciting. Website, please?
Website is torontozoo.ca.
Okay.
And, yeah.
And you are doing some live feed, so if you can't get to the zoo...
If you can't get to the zoo, watch our website. There will be live feed starting Monday, and we have done time-lapse as well. So once it does fully open up, you'll be able to see the whole process from start to finish without having to smell it.
That is pretty impressive.
I want to smell it.
I want to smell it, too. I'm not going to lie. I want to smell it, too.
Would you carry the odor out in your clothes?
I certainly hope not.
That would be stinky.
Yeah, let's have a word with this dead guy. Whoa.
Not nice. Not nice at all.
But that's going to be a pleasure, Paul.
You mentioned CP24. They've also set up.
CP24 has been in. They're setting up some live stream photos.
So there's multi-websites to stay on top. You've been doing YouTube clips on the zoo website. So lots to watch.
Lots to watch for.
And lots of fun there.
If you just Google Toronto Zoo or Toronto Corpse Flower, you'll get all the information.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for coming, Paul.
Thank you for having me.
Such a pleasure.
Great. Thank you.
You're a wonderful guest. And Frank, my friend, you're always a wonderful, a wonderful support person, the sous chef of the garden.
Wonderful.
Yes.
I'll be back
at 1 o'clock this afternoon.
You will. You're up with your next show. Thank you so much, Ainsley. She's done a great job with all kinds of crazy things coming at her. All right. Thanks, guys. See you all again next week.
This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.